Cummings' culture, and we're not live, but we're recorded. And this is a little different. We've got somebody, and like, you know, I bring people on here a lot, and a lot of people say you do interviews. And it's like, yeah, I do interviews, but at the same time, they're conversations. And that's what I always want them to be. So today, my conversing partner is none other than Jim, the old man, as most of you would know him. How are you, buddy?
Man, I am good. I'm all fired up. This has been a great day for me. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. I've always wanted to sit down and just talk with you, Jeremy. So here we go.
Yeah, here we go. And so, like, before we, like, just go, like, into the conversation, tell everybody about your podcast, how they can find it.
All right. Well, I have a podcast. It's called The Old Man's Podcast. That's what it's called on Podbean. When we do our show, the show is called The Old Man's Podcast with Eric Kirk and the Navigators. But you can find us on Podbean. And what you do is you get the Podbean app or on the webpage. I prefer the app than listen to the show. Get on the app, open up the front page you got there. Go to categories, hit the categories tab, and then you'll see leisure, hit leisure. And if it breaks it down to one more step, hit leisure again, and it'll pop up, and you'll see a picture of the old man. And that's me with a ball cap, glasses, my beard, sunglasses on. That's the old man. That's the old man's podcast. And you just hit that, and bing, bang, boom, you're right there with us in the show. Hit that follow button so you don't have to jump through those steps all the time. But we're pretty easy to find. It seems like everybody finds us pretty easily. So you want to go to Podbean. The discovery page when you open it up, hit categories, and then find the leisure tab, hit leisure, hit it again, leisure again, and there we are. You'll see us right there listed in the top four in their featured part of the thing, I believe. I don't know. I've never done it myself. I don't know. But you can always punch into the search bar, The Old Man's Podcast, and we'll pop up. Pretty easy to find. Pretty easy to find.
Yeah, it is. It's easy to find.
And we're on Monday through Friday live, 7 a.m. Pacific time, 10 a.m. Eastern time. Every day, Monday through Friday, we are like an alarm clock. We don't miss a show, and we're not late. 7 o'clock comes, bam, we're going. We're going live. So, been doing it now for almost 4 years, Jeremy. Almost 4 years.
4 years. So. Yeah. I've listened to the old man show for a while. And it's hard to believe that, you know, you're saying almost 4 years. Cummings' culture came around in late 2020.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah. I thought, you know, as good as you are at it, I figure you've been doing it for like 10 years or something. But
I actually got my start in 2019. My son, you might know him on Podbeam as Big Rich Dog. He had a podcast called Dreadnought 928, and that was in 2019. And I was just starting to get used to Podbeam, and I wanted to follow his show. So I got the app, and I was listening to his show. And then one day he calls me up and says, "Man, I lost another co-host. I need someone to be a co-host. Would you co-host for me?" And I was like, "What do you want me to do?" He goes, "Well, just be there and, you know, just kind of be my Ed McMahon, and I'll be like Johnny Carson." I go, "All right, no problem." And that's how I got started in podcasting. I was his co-host for a while. And then that ended right after 2020. It'd be like March, April. That show came to an end for a bit, and then I was bored. I'm going, "What am I going to do now? What am I going to do?" Because I really liked it. And Grammy, my wife, Grammy, she goes, "Well, start your own podcast." I don't know how to do that, you know. So I just fumbled through it and got the Old Man's Podcast started, and there you go. I've been doing it ever since. It's been a blast, man. It's a hobby of mine.
Like people. You know, so. You know, you talk about podcasting, and of course you're in it, and everybody knows that listens to your show knows and loves Grammy.
Yeah,
they the But a lot of people, to those that are listeners of Cummings' Culture and maybe just discovering, you know, the old man's podcast show, you're of the boomer generation.
And, yes, I am.
And I'm of the millennial generation. And there's a lot of people that think that there's a whole lot of differences between those generations. And as the years go on, I'm starting to see that the millennial generation is becoming more and more like the boomer generation, even though they don't want to admit it, but they are. So like, tell everybody, you know, how you grew up and where you grew up.
Well, before I do that, I got to brag a little bit. Okay, so coming to the end of 2023, I am, the Old Man's Podcast, is an award-winning podcast.
An award-winning podcast.
Yeah, I am the independent live podcast of the year, 2023, with Podcast Overlords, and you'll find them on Twitter.
I didn't know this.
Yeah. I got their first. Their first award that they ever gave out came to the Old Man's Podcast, and I'm the 2023 award-winning family-friendly morning show. I got the live podcast of the year, independent live podcast of the year from Podcast Overlord, and I am on. I am second. On the, let's see, what's the name of it? The, hold on. I knew I was going to forget. But is it food spot? I don't know what I am, but I'm number two on their top 100 family friendly podcasts.
That's great.
It blew me away. 2023 just literally blew me away. With the awards that we got, I mean, I was just they came out of nowhere. I had no idea that I was I was on this list. I had no idea that I was I was even being considered for the one from Podcast Overlord, and it just totally blew me away. So I just wanted to brag a little bit, you know.
Yeah, I didn't brag a little bit. I didn't know that. I didn't know that you had won an award.
Yeah. I'm trying. I'm still looking for that foot thing here. Let me see. Let me look. It's just. Let me look at. Anyway, yeah. And they're always mentioning it on Twitter. If you follow me on Twitter, you're probably getting tired of being notified of the awards I won, but it's because Podcast Overlord is continually posting it because they're proud of their little award that they give, and they're proud of the Old Man's Podcast, and they're always posting the other one, you know, where we're proud to congratulate the Old Man on being listed number two on this podcast, top 100 family-friendly podcast. I'm fumbling around because I'm trying to find that notice because I need to give them their props, give them their name the right way. I should have had this all listed.
I didn't know it, or I would have had that written down.
Well, you know, I'm an old man. I just can't remember things too good anymore. But let me see. I'm still looking and scrolling. But yeah, it's such an honor. It is such an honor to be recognized. And here it is. This is what Podcast Overlords puts us out. Congratulations to the Old Man's Podcast for reaching number two slot on the top 100 family-friendly podcasts presented by. They don't even have the name listed. Dagnabbit! How could they do that to me? Oh, FeedSpot, FeedSpot, FeedSpot. You can go to their page. You can look up 100 best family-friendly podcasts, and we are listed number two. As a matter of fact, when 2023 started, they contacted me, and they said, congratulations on being on our list of top 100 best family-friendly podcasts, and they gave me the link. I opened it up, and I was number one. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Then the next week I was number two, and I contacted them and said, how can I be number one last week, and now I'm number two. And they go, well, it changes every week. It changes every week according to podcast number, you know, their download numbers and this and that and this and that. So it's kind of like being on the Billboard Top 100 songs.
Yeah.
You know, it all depends on your numbers. And so, but we've maintained the number two spot all of January and February. So, man, we're locked in.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I know, man. But I'm so, I'm just so blessed. I'm so blessed because this is just a hobby. You know, I'm just doing this for fun. You know, and
no, there's a lot of people that think we do this for money. You know, they found out, and then they find out when they actually start doing a podcast, they find out that we're like elephants, man. We work for peanuts. So,
yeah. And so anyway, I wanted to brag. Thanks for letting me brag about the Old Bands podcast.
I didn't know it. Congratulations, though.
Thanks, man.
Give everybody's got to give the old man just a round of applause out there. You know.
And no one's more shocked than I am. Well, there are some people out there that don't particularly care for the Old Man's podcast. I know they are totally shocked. And all I gotta say to them is you know. Later, haters. No, I'm just kidding. So anyway, back to your question about being a
yeah.
What am I?
You're a boomer. You're a boomer.
I'm a boomer, man. I'm proud.
Tell people about a little bit how it was like growing up as a boomer.
Well, I tell you, when we lived in the neighborhood, we knew everybody in the neighborhood. There was no, you know, the turnaround, the people coming in and out of the neighborhood didn't change. I mean, we grew up with who we grew up with. The families were solid in the neighborhoods. We grew up with everybody. We knew all the kids. We knew all the parents. You know, my mom and dad were friends with the neighbors and, you know, our street and then people behind them on the other street and behind us. That, you know, we knew everybody. The neighborhoods were solid little communities. We knew everybody. And, you know, all those kids grew up together. We're running around. We all went to the same schools. You know, we all went to the same school and we played with everybody outside of the school. And, you know, we were our generation. You know, if I'm over at Johnny Johnson's, and that's a real kid from my youth, Johnny Johnson's yard. If Mr. Johnson, and we knew everybody as Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, you know, we didn't know anybody's name, and we yes sir'd and no sir'd and yes ma'am'd everybody too. And if we got out of line, Mr. Johnson, he could, you know, he could paddle our little behind, you know, give us a swat. You know, you better straighten up. Don't make me tell your mom. Okay. And he, you know, we'd get a swat. But you know, we had great respect for the neighborhood, the authorities running around, the other parents. And we just had a blast. And there are times, I'm 70 years old now. And there's times when I still remember, you know, running around in the neighborhood, playing army. You know, we're playing army or we're playing cowboys and Indians. Oh, heaven forbid. Cultural appropriation. You know, oh, that's racism. No, you know what that was? That was fun. That was fun, man.
I think it's culture. I think it's culture appreciation when you have children that are running around and, you know, some people are acting like they're cowboys and the other ones are acting like they're Indians or Native Americans, you know, whatever they want to, you know, I think that's culture appreciation.
I totally agree with you. You know, I mean, we'd grow up and, you know, Cinco de Mayo would come around. We're all dressed in sombreros and ponchos and, you know, and we're running around. Nowadays, that's, you know, you can't dress like that. That's cultural. That's not right. You know, that's whatever we were saying, inappropriate. You know, you can't dress like that. You're not Mexican. No, we appreciate the Mexican culture. They were celebrating the Mexican culture. That's why we're doing it. You know, I totally agree with that thought. You know, it is appreciation. Cultural appreciation is what we were doing.
That's like now where they tell people, like, I seen where a white little girl had her hair braided. And they were like, oh, she stole that from the black culture and this and that. And I'm like, Well, wait a minute, because if you go back to the Scottish were braiding their hair in like the 6th century or something like that. Like what are?
Oh yeah,
like whatever century it was, like hundreds of years ago. So at the end of the day, you know, it's culture appreciation, you know, and kids like running around playing cowboys and Indians. We did the same thing when I was a kid.
Yeah. And we, you know, we'd all get together and decide, okay, who's going to be cowboys, who's going to be Indians, you know? And it's like, I'm going to be an Indian, you know, I'm going to be a cowboy. And then we'd pick sides, and then, you know, the territory wars broke out in the neighborhood.
Who got to be Marshall Dillon?
I don't think I ever got to be Marshall Dillon. Well, you know, when I was growing up, though, Marshall Dillon was on the radio, Jeremy.
Yeah.
That was, Gunsmoke was a radio show then. But yeah, it was a lot of fun growing up. And I remember, you know, we all, like I said, we grew up knowing everybody from first grade to high school graduation. Unless there was a major thing happened in the neighborhood, like, a new high school got built when I was going to high school. So, the high school that we were all going to on south side of Tucson, Pueblo High and Tucson High, their school populations got split and the school lines got redrawn, and we all went, half of us from both those schools went to the new school, Choya. But, you know, we grew up with all these kids in the neighborhood. We knew where everybody lived, and, you know, we all rode the buses together to school, grades 1 through 12. We grew up knowing everybody, you know. I mean, that's how it was. Like I said, we knew everybody's parents, you know, Mr. Hike, Mr. Zimmerman, you know, we just knew everybody. You know, we'd be over as a, Danny Trejo's house, you know, they're getting ready. Hey, Jimmy, you want to stay and eat? We're getting ready to eat. You want to stay and eat? Yeah, sure. You know, I mean, they were very welcoming to the neighbor kids. You know, my mom, I don't remember my mom ever chasing anybody out of the house or out of the neighborhood. She'd just come in and know them. Hi, Pat. How you doing? Hey, Fritz, what's going on? You know, how you guys doing in school? You know, you guys be good out there now. Don't be getting in trouble, you know. And it was just a different time. We didn't have the neighborhood nomads running around, you know, people coming into a neighborhood for a year or two and then moving out, a new family coming in. I mean, we never saw vacant homes. You know, the people that lived there. And that's how it was. And then school, oh my God, school was totally different than what the school is. You know, our schools, we literally learned, you know, ABCs, arithmetic, and, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic. That's what we learned, you know. And then you throw in history, both nation and world history in there, and social studies. Civics, we had shop classes, you know, and you know, guys learning how to work on cars while they're still like 11 or 12 years old in shop classes, and you know, and the girls had the home ec classes where they're learning how to, you know, cook and sew and all this and that. And then I'm of the generation where our generation started to combine those things. Guys started showing up in the home ec classes, girls started showing up in the shop classes, you know. And, it's a totally different time. Fun times. Did we have our problems, Jeremy? Yeah, we had our problems. I grew up and was going to school in the 60s. And people think, well, that was, you know, there was nothing going on in the 60s. Oh, you need to study the 60s. we had great civil unrest, you know, a lot of racial issues in the 60s. We had the Vietnam War going on in the 60s. You know, we had our problems, we had our issues, we had our political issues and problems too. But I mean, it's just not like today. I mean, I think, yeah.
Were you drafted to go to Vietnam?
No, I missed the draft by a couple of numbers. I was in like one of the last drafts that happened for Vietnam. And I remember us looking in the paper for the numbers that were published and put out there. And my number was like 3 or 4 spots below the cutoff line. I didn't get in. I didn't get in.
See, because my grandpa was above the age. He was, let's see, you said you're 70 now. He would have been 82 if he was still alive. Mm-hmm. And see, it was what? It's 18 to 26, and 26 is the cutoff for the draft.
I don't know. All I know is I was 17, and I believe it or not, I wanted to. I wanted to go to Vietnam. I wanted to go fight for my country. I wanted to be in our military. I wanted that military experience. And so much so that I actually talked my mom into go ahead and signing the papers and letting me enlist. So I went down to a recruiter. I enlisted into the Air Force, you know, got all my papers filled out, took my tests. I was going to go into the Air Force as an electrician. You know, they said that would be my best field. And so I'm down. I get on the bus. I go down to the recruiting office to go through the physicals and everything. And I had had some knee surgeries done when I was in high school. And they looked at my scars on my knees. And they looked at my slightly high blood pressure and go, nope, we're going to 4F you. And the Air Force, we are not taking you. As a matter of fact, your draft status now is 4F, which meant that I couldn't be drafted, you know, 4F, medical reasons.
Yeah,
and it was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking for me because I actually wanted that experience. And after I got the 4F, I just went home. I'm sulking, you know, man, because I was graduation was just around the corner, high school graduation. I didn't know what I was going to do because I was planning on getting into the military. And after that all passed, somebody come up to me that was in the military and goes, well, you know, you could have just walked down the hallway to the Army. Or to the Marines, and they would have taken you. They didn't care. They didn't care about you being 4F. And it just broke my heart. Because I would have been a heartbeat. I would have gotten the Army. You know, and now I see some of these people when they're talking about the draft, the newer generations. If they think they're going to draft me, well, I got news for them. You know, and I'm thinking, man, you guys are missing the boat. Because I'm of the old school, Jeremy, where I think you graduate from high school, you should automatically go in and do a 2-year military stitch. I think you should be in the military for 2 years, right out of high school. Everybody, 18 years old, you're in the military for 2 years. Because I'm basing it on the military when I was a kid. I mean, you got in there, you got exposed to discipline, you got exposed to, you know, what it's like to have to take orders and pay a consequence if you didn't. You know, you grew up. It helped you. It prepared you for life. It prepared you for the world, you know. And, I'm old school. I'm not afraid to say it.
Yeah. A lot of these new kids, though, when they're talking about getting drafted, I feel like the situation, you know, now that we found out about Vietnam and how bad our government lied about what really happened, and that's saddening. But at the same time, I see these kids now and they're like, well, we're not going to fight and die for, you know, a rich man's war. And, you know, if we want to be honest, every war is a rich man's war and the poor man fights.
Every war is a political war. Every war. And I think that I don't think World War II so much was, because you had Hitler and the Nazis in Europe just ravishing countries, running through and taking over everything. And then you had the Imperial Japanese, and they were doing the same thing in Asia. And in the islands and all that in the South Pacific, they were just going through. And I think those were a little bit slightly tied. Though there are political hints, you know, political things to those, I don't think as much as like after World War II, now comes Korea. Absolutely political. Yeah. Absolutely political. That wasn't even declared a war. It was a police state, you know. Yeah. It was a police action. So, yeah, I think it's because our so-called leaders, and I do not call anybody, any politician a leader. I do not have a political leader. They are my servants because I voted, and they're in doing what they're doing because we voted for them, not because they just, you know, they're not a leader. And if you call your representatives and your congressmen, you know, people in the Senate, and you call the president, if you call them that they're your leader, man, you are not paying attention. You don't know how the government is supposed to work. They're not leaders. They're servants. And they serve to our beck and call. That's how it should be.
They've forgotten that too. And it's like, you see that, like, you know, the stuff that's modern day, mm-hmm. something that you could compare to Vietnam in the modern day would be the Ukraine. What's going on over there. And of course, we already know the corruption that the Biden administration has with Ukraine, how Joe Biden's son was on a board over there and got billions of dollars or millions of dollars. And then he apparently got a 10% kickback on that. And there's recordings of Biden, you know, like, this is crazy, but there's recordings of him saying he doesn't want Trump to find out about the deals that they've done in Ukraine and all that. And I see that younger generation, and, you know, I'm 31. So if they fired up a draft tomorrow, I see why those 18 to 25, 26 year olds are kicking up so much about it, because, like, it, you know, like today, like they said that, you know, before we started this, they said that there was a national security threat. There's a national mm-hmm. security threat from Russia because, you know, yesterday a $95 billion package of funding to Ukraine failed. It didn't pass. And so now all of a sudden there's a new threat by Russia. And, you know, we find out this morning they say, oh, there's a threat. There's a threat to our national security. It's a major threat. And they're pumping this propaganda all over the news. And then they say, then we find out that it leaks out that the big national security threat is Russia's wanting to put nuclear weapons in space. And it's like, well, they can't do that, number one. Number two, like, that's not an immediate threat. That's not something we should be sending $95 billion of U.S., you know, money over there for the Ukrainian government, who at the same time, I don't want to get too far down in this rabbit hole, but I don't trust Putin. I'm not a Russian lover. I don't like him. I think he's a dictator. I think he's a slime ball, and I think he's a power hungry maniac. I think he's all those things. But at the same time, we've lied to that slime ball, that dictator, and that power hungry maniac, and we've pushed him into a corner. I see all these people putting pro Ukrainian stuff in their profiles and all this, and I'm like, wait a minute. We're sitting here and we're talking about Putin, who's a dictator and all of these terrible things. But at the same time, you have Zelensky over there who's in Ukraine, who has canceled elections, banned churches, and forced people to join his war. He's just as bad as Putin, and there's no good side to be on here, so let's just stay out of it.
Taking over the media. They control their own media. They control what information goes out to their people. Their people are enslaved. I am not an anti Putin. I am not an anti that guy in Ukraine. I am an anti government guy.
Yeah.
I don't trust any government. I don't care what country you have. I don't care what country you live in. I don't care. I don't trust your government, because that to me, and I, you know, this is what I've grown up. Now I look back at my life and I'm thinking, man, how naive was I? You know, because we were naive. We were naive as to what was going on in Vietnam. You know, we were naive to what was going on in Korea. And they say, well, how do you know about what was going on then now? Well, because we went back and looked at everything. We examined it in aged eyes, wiser eyes, you know, critical thinking. And we go, hey, wait a minute. You guys duped us.
Yeah,
you know, you guys were duping us up.
It is bad, like, when you see so many people of your generation, like, how many people died in Vietnam? Like, way up in the thousands of Americans die.
The number came to my mind was 52,000, 55,000 troops. I'm not sure.
But you see all of those people that were of your generation that are dead because the government lied about the Gulf of Tonkin incidents. And it's like, how can you trust your government?
That's why when the first thing, that's why when the first Gulf War came up with Bush Senior and they, or that they, you know, when that first thing came up, it was like, man, that's all about oil. They're trying to, it's all about oil. They're trying to protect the oil things in Kuwait, and you know, they're going after what was that guy in Iraq?
Hussein.
Hussein around to him. And then the next one comes up and they're saying, well, they got weapons of mass destruction, so we got to go. And that's why my generation, the majority of my generation was going, no, there ain't no. If they've got weapons of mass destruction, it's because you gave them to them, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like with Hussein, what a lot of people don't, they think, well, Hussein was bad. And who was the guy in Libya?
Libya, Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah, they're saying all these guys are mean and they're evil. Who do you think put them in power, people? We did. Well, our government's put them in power.
It's like Putin in that interview. Like, that's one of the things that the American people should look at and go back and just look at about what Putin said in that interview. Did Putin lie in that interview? Of course he did. But there's some stuff in there he told the truth about. Like when he said that our government was funding the terrorists in northern Afghanistan to fight against the Russians, and then all of a sudden those terrorists turn around and they bomb our towers over here.
Yeah, and now all of a sudden, now we're fighting the same people that the Russians were fighting. Why? Because the Taliban and that are insane. They don't care. They're fighting everybody. But, you know, we're on the Taliban side because they're fighting Russia. Yeah, that was, they were saying that was Russia's Vietnam, you know, fighting the Taliban. And then now all of a sudden, now we're fighting the Taliban. Well, you know, what's going on? Yeah. People need to wise up. I've always said this, Jeremy. I've said this for probably a decade or so. I've always said that, you know, the governments of the world, their thing is to control the people. Plain and simple. If you don't see that, you're not looking. You're just not looking. And the governments of the world would absolutely tremble. They would shake in their boots if the people would unite. If we would put aside our little differences that they keep throwing up and trying to keep us divided, if we would just say, you know what, let's put our differences down, let's all unite, let's get our countries back from these corrupt, insane governments, they would tremble because there's not a country that has a powerful enough military to fight the United States front with the people of the world uniting. That's just my opinion, but I really believe that. I really believe that. Yeah. I mean, it's like our own nation. It's like you were saying up for people saying, you know, well, Putin, I don't believe anything Putin said because he's lying. He's lying to the people. Oh, our government ain't lying to us every time they have a press conference? Come on! What are you saying? I mean, the government's the biggest liars around. I mean, and, you know, we are so gullible as people. We're so gullible. You know, we think that because because I'll tell you one thing. You're getting me fired up. that press secretary that we have now, there isn't a bigger liar on the planet. I mean,
did you see where she tweeted out something like, you know, she controls Biden's Twitter account, right? Like people didn't know. She tweeted out something that she was supposed to put on Biden's account, but she messed up and she accidentally put it on her account.
Oh my gosh. You know, and I mean, you know, people might be listening. People will listen to this later and they're going to go, oh, I can't believe the old man said that. I can't believe you don't see it. That's what I can't believe you don't see what I see. I mean, I'm not the world's smartest man. I'm not the most intelligent man alive, but I know how to look at things through critical eyes. I question everything. I question everything. And they say, well, you're just a right winger, a mega guy. No, because I question everything they say too. I mean, I just, I question everybody. Everybody's lying.
We're centrist.
If, If you believe the government, you are not paying attention. You know, they say the one thing I like that people started saying is left wing, white wing. It doesn't matter. It's all the same bird. Exactly. Exactly. And if you're not watching, you're not paying attention. Stop being gullible. Stop. And I put out a TikTok when I used to be on TikTok years ago.
Yeah.
And I put my first TikTok video was I just asked everybody, why are you angry? Why are you angry against this group or that group? Why are you angry against this and that? Who told you to be angry? You know, it's not because they've done anything to you. You're angry because the media and the government has told you to be angry. That's why.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how I was. I used to be, Jeremy, I used to be such an angry person when it came politically. I have been excommunicated off of Twitter. I have been blocked and locked out of Facebook for who knows how long because I was. That's where was my political outlook. I mean, a release, you know. And I'm serious. When I started my podcast page on Twitter, I had to use my podcast email, my podcast. I couldn't say it was Jim Merck because they would have said, "No, you're not getting on board." And even now, when I'm on Twitter, it's my page is solely on my podcast. That's what it is, the Old Man's Podcast. And I'll be reading things because I still get, you know, I still see the news and all that.
Yeah.
And I'll read something and I go, "Whoa, what the no?" What the? And I start typing. I'm tapping and typing away. You know, you can't say that. I'm tip tap typing, typing, and then I get ready to post. And this little voice in my mind goes, "This isn't yours. This is the podcast page." Oh, delete. You know, because I don't want to lose all the work I put into my podcast page. But I used to be very angry. And then I asked myself that question one time. I go, "Why am I mad? Why am I mad?" And I go, "It's because I have been brainwashed. I have been told through the media that I need to be mad about this. I need to be mad about that." And I, you know, it made me stop being the way I was when I grew up. Like you said, you referred to us as centralists. Yeah. And people said, you don't hear that term anymore. Uh-huh. And what a centralist was is there are certain things when I grew up that the Republican Party would say, and I go, "Yes, I agree with that. Yes, yeah. I wholeheartedly agree with that." And there's certain things that the Democrat Party would say, and I'd go, "Yes, I agree with that. I solely agree with that." And that put me in the center. I'm a centralist. I just want what's good for the country.
Yeah.
You know, and being that way makes you see how corrupt everybody is.
Yeah. And then you get called a right wing nut job, and you get called a racist, and you get called when you think that way, when you don't pick a side. Everybody's got this Borg mentality now, to where you're this. I get called a Democrat in Alabama all the time, and that, and you know that's so out of left field for me to be called a Democrat. But I get called a Democrat a lot because I'm sitting here and I'm like, "We need to expand Medicaid." And they're like, "Wait a minute, what are you talking about?" I'm like, we have the worst health in the United States. Don't you think we need to do something about it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, and people talk to me about, "Well, who is your favorite president?" I mean, I've seen, I don't know how many elections I've witnessed. I mean, I remember Ike being in the White House because my parents, I remember them talking about it. But as I grew up, and then I think the first election that I was ever really got involved in was JFK. JFK running against Nixon. That's the first one I became aware of.
Do you remember where you were when he got shot?
Yeah, I was in school. I was in the fourth grade when he got shot. And it devastated me. Because I was a JFK. I loved President Kennedy. I did. Let me explain. The reason I did is the first book I ever read as a young boy, PT-109. That's him when he was in the Navy. and he was a commander of a PT boat. I fell in love with that story, and I fell in love with the president, you know, and I liked the president. Did I approve of everything he did? No, I did not. But I approved of a lot of things he wanted. Getting rid of the Federal Reserve? Oh, yeah, get rid of them, people. Get rid of them, you know. Go back to the gold standard? Yes, go back to the gold standard. I mean, he had some policies I agreed with. I agreed with JFK, too, you know. And but people hear me say that, and they go, oh, well, you're a Democrat. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. And, his assassination totally devastated me. And then Martin Luther King gets assassinated. I'm a big Martin Luther King fan. Well, you're just a racist old man. Really? I'm a racist? You know Grammy's black, right? You know I grew up around the Mexican and the black communities in Tucson, right? I mean, I grew up with these kids. And there's not a race. I don't think there's a racist bone in my body. I grew up with a mom who was an RN. She was a nurse, and she did everything in nursing. She was an emergency room nurse, surgical nurse. And I remember my mom sitting us down and talking to me and saying, "You know what? You know what colored matters? It's not black. It's not white. It's not brown. You know what color matters?" And I'm going, "No, what color matters?" She goes, "Red. Red. When somebody comes in the emergency room, we have one job, and that is to stop the red from spilling out of a body." She goes, "So if you think you're different, if you think you're high and mighty over this race or that race, why don't you just go ahead and give yourself a cut in the arm and see what color you bleed?"
Well, it's just like
red.
Just like you're saying that, just like around here, like people assume because I'm from Alabama, that, you know, racism, right? They think, oh, they're all racist down there. And it's like, you know, we were too poor to be racist. Everybody down here was like in Northwest Alabama, we were all in this together. It wasn't this is segregated and that segregated because we were all too poor. And a matter of fact, like Muscle Shoals, like a lot of people, you know, they've heard of it now. But if you go back to Muscle Shoals in the 1960s and 70s, Rick Hall at the Fame Recording Studio, Muscle Shoals, Alabama was the only place that blacks could record in the South. And so like Aretha Franklin, Percy Sledge, all these people, they came out of here because this is the only place they could record because we was too poor down here. And so like, did I see racism when I was a kid? Yeah, I seen it.
Oh, I did too.
We didn't participate in it. And there's a reason we didn't participate in it was because, you know, I grew up in the city, like, you know, a small town, but it's still the city around here. And everybody was all in together. I went to a school that had just about every kind of race you could think of. And then I married my wife, and you know, you don't realize it when you grow up like where I grew up, and you know, you're all in just one big mixing pot. Nobody thinks nothing about anything, and everybody goes to church together, and nobody pays that stuff any attention. Mm-hmm. And then you look at her, and she goes, "Yeah, there were no black kids in my school." And I'm like, "What? Wait a minute, what?" You know, it's just like it's a different world wherever you go all over the state.
Oh, yeah.
So,
are you there, Jeremy?
Yeah. Oh. No. It's just a different world wherever, you know, you would go over the state is like you go to Birmingham, it's predominantly black. You go to, you know, you come up here, like where I live now, it's, I think it's 51% white, 48% Hispanic and 2% black. Like, I think that's, or something, it's something along those lines or something like that. Anyway, but like, you know, now this population here is turning Hispanic, and it's just like now we have a Hispanic festival every year now. And so I go to that, but I grew up with these people too. Like the people from Hispanic heritage were coming in here, you know, when I was a kid, and I was going to school with these kids. And we didn't know any different. Like, everybody was just children. Like, kids don't know how to hate until somebody teaches them how.
That's it. That's exactly true. It's a taught behavior. It's not an inherited behavior. It's a taught it's a taught behavior.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I grew up, the neighborhood I grew up in, yeah, we were a predominantly white little neighborhood, Manzanita Manor, South Tucson, our little community that we grew up in, you know, the housing development, Manzanita Manor, majority white. But the majority of the kids that went to our high school, it was split between Mexicans and blacks, and then whites. We were not the majority in our school, because of where the school was located. And we all got along. We all got along fine, you know. We all got along. I mean, we didn't have any issues because that's just how we were raised. You know, that's how we were raised. This one thing about this open border, and this has got me in trouble before with people, but, you know, people are not paying attention. And the one thing I tell everybody, and this is what makes them mad, I say, you know, you all saying that we need to close the border and keep the Mexicans from coming across the border. Do you know that that's not the Mexicans that's the problem? The Mexicans are not the problem. The Mexicans aren't coming across the border in big waves. It's everybody else. It's from people from Africa, the Middle East, you know, the terrorist countries.
China.
Yeah, it's not the – if it was just the Mexicans, we wouldn't have any problem.
No.
Mexicans have been coming across the border since day one, and they've never been a problem. It's everybody else that's coming across.
You go back to World War II, though. Like, you were discussing Ike being the president and all that. And, like, you know, we were discussing World War II earlier. If you go back to World War II and research history, they actually had a problem with people coming across the border then.
Mm-hmm.
And so
– yeah, this is – now, this isn't a problem that just happened in the last 5 years.
No.
Yeah.
No, they were deputizing, like, farmers and stuff down there. And, like they were doing shoot-on-sites and stuff like that back then because of, like, you know, that they were having such a problem with it because food was rationed during World War II. And,
right.
And, like, people used to get those little tokens. You know, I've seen.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, like the commodity cheese and stuff like that. So apparently, like, back then they were having problems of people coming in, getting those tokens, weren't citizens of the United States, getting it and carrying it back, you know, and then trying to resell it. And so, like, there's always been scammers. There's always been people try to take advantage of the system and gaming the system. This is nothing new. It's just the fact of, like what you were talking about, this open border. It's just negligence.
Yeah, it's total negligence, you know, total negligence. Why wouldn't you want to? Why do we want to spend, you know, around $100 billion protecting the borders of the people in Ukraine and in Israel? Why are we spending that kind of money over there and we just ignore our border totally?
Well, that's like
that's, that is not fathomable to me. I cannot fathom that.
Well, that's what the mainstream media and all of these people, they don't understand the appeal of Donald Trump. And the appeal of Donald Trump is that Trump just came out, like, not long ago. And yeah, he's a big supporter of Israel, but this was a week ago. He said, hey, we're sending money over there for them to replenish their Iron Dome. We created this wonderful technology, this Iron Dome, this anti-rocket, you know, stuff. And mm-hmm. He was like, we don't have it here. He was like, I get back. He's like, I'm reelected into I get back in D.C. I get back in the White House. We're going to build an Iron Dome over America.
Exactly.
And that's like, that's what people don't understand about it. It's the America first mentality, because at the end of the day, like, I think our downfall in this country and I think the downfall of America will go down in history as like we want to be the leaders of the world, right? That's what they keep saying. We want to be the leaders of the world. Well, mm-hmm. How do you be the leader of the world? Well, you got to start with making sure your own house is in order.
Exactly.
And our house is not in order. It's falling apart. Our roads are falling apart. Our infrastructure's failing. Our kids are undereducated. You have children believe they can be what, you know, the children with severe mental illness now. You have mental illness has boomed in this country. Depression, anxiety is at an all-time high. You've got the sickest nation on God's earth, even though we're the most developed nation on God's earth. We have the highest rate of cancer in the world. We have the highest rate of heart disease in the world. We rank at the bottom when it comes to education. We rank at the bottom when it comes to access to health care. Something's wrong. We're on life support over here, and we're talking about sending billions of dollars to Ukraine, to Israel, and all of these other countries. And God bless Israel. I'm a Christian, so I believe, you know, God blesses Israel. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, at the same time, God loves an Israeli. God loves a Palestinian just as much as he does an Israeli. And I don't like seeing children eating bombs and while they're trying to eat breakfast in the morning.
No, neither do I.
And so
neither do I.
You know, that's got to end. We got to stop the launching the rockets at one another, and everybody's got to grow up and start being adults. You know, not everybody wants to, you know, Jim, I don't know about you, but I don't want to rule the world. I don't want to tell somebody else. I don't want to tell somebody else how to live their life.
I don't either. And I don't want anybody telling me how to live my life.
No.
You know, people, I used to ask people when we'd get into government arguments, you know, I'd say, hey, what do you want? What kind of government do you want? What do you want? You know, and they go, well, what do you want? I go, I want to be left alone.
Exactly.
I want to be able to live my life and be left alone. Now, what do you want? Do you want a government to come in and tell you what car you can drive? What can you watch on TV? Where you know, when you can come out of your house, when you can go in your house? You know, you got to do this, do that, do this, that. I mean, do you want that kind of government? I mean, you know, people, you need to start waking up. Ask yourself, what kind of government do I want? You know, and I'm a right wing, you know, I'm a right winger, you know, I'm because I just want to be left alone. Well, that's how, you know what, you were asking me earlier, how was it when I grew up, when I was a little kid, a little baby boomer running around? Because the generation before me were the, what were they? They were the silent generation.
Yeah.
They were the silent generation, but they were the greatest generation around because they're the ones who fought World War II and into World War and World War I, World War II. They were the silent generation. But you know what? We left everybody alone. We left everybody alone. You know, all the division in that we had in this country, you know, like leading into the 60s you know, all the racial stuff. That was government motivated. They stirred that pot. They're the ones that go, hey, you know, you shouldn't like these people because, you know, they got a different skin color than you, you know. And I used to always say, when I grew up, I was like what you said, you know, did I see racism? Yes, I grew up in the 60s. It was everywhere. And I could not understand why, when I'm going downtown Tucson, Arizona with my mom, why there's a drinking fountain there that says whites only. I remember asking my mom, what is that all about? She goes, well, you just, you know, I'll tell you later. We just not going to talk about it now. And I remember when the National Guard was called out and took those girls, took those young kids to that school in the South. I can't remember the details of
University
it.
Of Alabama.
It wasn't the university. It was like to a high school.
Oh, I don't know, but I know the university. I don't know. You probably should remember this. You remember George Wallace? The University of Alabama. He stood in front of the door, and Kennedy had to tell the National Guard to remove him.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking about. But I remember seeing that going, why? What's up with that? Can't we just go to school and learn? You know, because I saw us all as us. You know, that's what I saw. I saw us all as us. We're Americans. We're Americans. Wasn't this all settled in the 1860s with the Civil War? Wasn't this all settled? I mean, wasn't this all taken care of? Why are we still having this battle? Because it was politically motivated.
It was the government that kept pushing it. Like, that's that's the...
I think when it comes to racism, I always tell people, you know, everybody, and rightfully so, they talk about Martin Luther King, you know, and his I Have a Dream speech and all this and that. Great speech. If you haven't heard it, you need to hear that speech. But there's another person that they totally ignore, Malcolm X. Malcolm X said the downfall of America is going to be the liberal media. He said that, folks. Check out Malcolm X's speeches. That man was on top of it. His biggest problem is the white liberal media. Yes. Oh, that was Malcolm X.
You know, I heard a leader from another country. I can't remember which country it was. And it was a Muslim country. And they were not too friendly of America, you know. And they were asking him, they were like, well, how come when y'all come to the United States, how come y'all are all Democrats and push for this Democratic agenda and push for this socialism and all this stuff? And he was like, well, if you were trying to get somebody to fall, wouldn't you push for the things that make them fall?
Yeah. Yeah, I've never understood that. Yeah. I never understand it.
You lived in other countries as well, haven't you?
Yeah, we lived in England in for a couple of years, 2002. Yeah, we lived in England. Great experience. I loved living in England. As a matter of fact, if I was independently wealthy and I could retire, I'd retire to the UK. I'd go live in Scotland. I really would. I just love that place.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do. I do. And you know what? There's a ton of Brits. There's a ton of UK people there that think the same way we do. They just want to be left alone. You know, they just want to be left alone. And they're being confronted with the same issues and problems we are, you know. But they're a great people. And that's the one thing I loved about it. When I went over there because of a job, my job I had, I was over there doing inspection work for the new construction on bridges for California. And I'm over there doing the QA work for California. I was a representative for the state of California in the UK. And when I went there, when I was getting ready to go, they said, okay, look, we're going to tell you three things you really need to be aware of. I go, okay, what's that? One, the British do not like Americans. They won't like you. Two, they do not have a sense of humor. So you got to watch yourself. And they go, and three, the food is absolutely terrible there. I go, oh, okay, I've never been to England before. I didn't know. I've never been out of the country. So I go over there, and within 2 weeks, I'm calling up my supervisors in America. I'm calling them up from England. I go, let me tell you guys something. They go, what's that? I go, one, they absolutely do love Americans. And two, they have an awesome sense of humor. And three, the food is delicious. I love the food here. So, you know, I went over there and I experienced it, and I told them they're all wrong. You're wrong. You don't know nothing about this country. And it was a great experience, made some great friends. And we were able, while we were there, Grammy and I's second wedding anniversary, because we got married in 2000. And so it was the later part of 2000 that we went over to England. So our first anniversary had passed. We spent that, believe it or not, we spent that in Jackson, Mississippi. I was in Mississippi on an assignment there.
Oh.
And Grammy caught a plane from Portland, Oregon to Jackson, Mississippi or someplace. And she came, and I come home from work and I get a phone call. Hey, what are you doing? I go, nothing. She goes, you want to come pick me up? I go, pick you up? Where are you? She goes, I'm at the airport. I need you to come get me. Awesome. So our first anniversary was there. Our second anniversary was in Paris, France.
Oh.
And so we spent a while in Paris. And they, you know, now the British people told us the same thing about France. They told us the same thing about the French. They hate you. They're not a sense, you know, the same thing, no sense of humor. They couldn't say anything about the food because they liked the French food.
Yeah.
But we went there. We were told by an old Italian guy, just an old Italian grandpa, on the train on our way to Paris, France, because we were talking. He overheard us talking. And the guy was telling us, you know, you're not going to get along with the French and this and that and this and that. Well, this old Italian guy comes up and goes, hey, can I sit down and talk? Yeah, sure. He goes, first off, they're wrong. They don't know what they're talking about. If you will learn three things, if you learn how to say hello in French, bonjour. And if you would learn how to say, do you speak English, parlez-vous English? And if you would learn to say, merci beaucoup, thank you very much. If you will learn those three things, the French will love you. And I go, really? And he goes, yeah. And the reason they will is because you're showing an effort in speaking their language. You know, you're showing them that you're not, you don't think you're above them, that you want to talk to them. And you want to communicate, and this is what you know in French, and they will embrace you. And he was right. He was right. We had the best time we had in France. And it's funny because when I first went to England, I'm there with a bunch of American engineers, and we were staying in this castle that had been converted into like a big, hotel. And so we're going down the stairs, and then one of the lower floors that we had to pass through, they were having a wedding there, a nice big wedding, full-blown, gorgeous wedding. And here we are, a group of us, about, you know, 10, 12 Americans, were coming down the stairs, just as loud and obnoxious as Americans can be, you know, and we can be loud. And we're coming down to this floor, and they're having a wedding. I mean, they're having a wedding. It's a nice, quiet ceremony going on, and I turned around and I went, hey, I yelled at everybody, hey, do we actually have to be the big loud Americans that they say we are when we go down this by this wedding? Come on, have a little respect. And they all quieted up because they knew I was right. And we passed through, yeah, okay, nice and quiet going down there. And you know, and then the same thing when we were in France, we're down there having breakfast, and there's a group of British people there, just as loud and rude as they could be. And I remember going, really? Do you really have to, you know, enforce the mentality that the French have towards you Brits by acting like this? I go, come on. So, I mean, you know, I was on my way to try to unite the peoples. You know, I was a uniter. I was a peacekeeper among the peoples. Great time. I loved it. And spent some time going with some friends to the pub. The only time I felt in danger, we went to a pub. I was with this engineer from California that I really loved and adored, Mazen. His name was Mazen. I can't remember his last name. He was from Kuwait. All right. He was from Kuwait. Yeah. And so him and I, we go to this pub, and they had the soccer on. They had the football on, and it was England was playing Germany. And this place was packed. And we go in there. I think we were in York. We were in the township of York. And we were in there, and we walk in this old pub, and they're there. The place is packed, and we're watching the game. You know, we're standing at the bar and we're watching the game, everybody cheering and hollering. Well, Britain was coming in. They shot at the goal, and the goalie made a tremendous save. It was an awesome save. And I went, whoa, what an awesome save. Every eye in that place turned and looked at me. And Moslem grabs me by the arm. He goes, you're going to get us killed if you do that again. Don't ever cheer against England in an English pub. It was like, oh, my God. And I was like, oh. And I shared that with some of my British friends, and they go, oh, yeah, you're lucky you got out of that place alive. They would have ripped you up. I go, man, I guess my only saving grace was that I was a dumb American. You know, as an American, he doesn't know better.
Did you ever go over to Germany?
No, I didn't make it. I had a problem with my passport. Because when I was over there, they said, you're going to England. Here's your ticket. Grab the plane and go. So I did. And I just took off. I went. That's all. The only documentation, the only paperwork I had with me was my passport. So I went there, got in, got through customs, and, you know, easy peasy, lemon squeezy. Well, when we went to Paris for our anniversary, that, and we had already been there about a year, coming back, immigrations coming back into England from Paris, from France. English immigration stopped us and said, "You guys, where are you going?" "Oh, we're going to Doncaster. We're going to go home." "How long have you been in England?" And we told them. They look at the passports and go, "What are you doing in England?" I'm going, "Well, I'm working. I represent the state of California." And they go, "Where's your work permits? Where's your work visa and this and that?" And I go, "Work visa? What's that? What are you talking about?" And they go, "We got a problem here, sir." We almost did not get back into the nation because I didn't have a work permit. And we sat there waiting for immigration to look and ask questions and do research on us, investigate us, you know, and they talked to me by myself. Then they talked to Grammy and I'm sweating bullets. I'm going, "Oh my God, I'm going to get put on a plane and sent home now. You know, they're going to deport me now." And we got a house in Doncaster with all our belongings and everything. All my work stuff is there. What am I going to do? How am I going to get all that stuff? Well, Grammy was the last one to be interviewed. And I give Grammy credit for all this. And, you know, when you're dealing with immigration, those people aren't friendly. They are not fun people to deal with. They are down to business. And Grammy went and they talked to her and she comes back. She comes back with a female immigration officer that's pregnant, that's from the United States. I go, "Oh my gosh, who's this?" And so Grammy goes, "Okay, well, thank you, dear, thank you." And she goes, "Okay, here are your passports, and thank you, and you know, take care of things, and blah, blah, blah." And I looked at Grammy and I went, "What did you do?" She goes, "Oh, I just worked a little Grammy magic in there and started talking to him." And the head immigration guys come back and go, "Okay, look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to give you 6 months. You got six more months that you can stay in the UK, and then you have got to go, and you can't come back for at least another year. You can't just come here and do what you're doing without a work visa. You got to come here. You got to leave. Be gone. You got to come here for 3 months. You got to leave for 3 months. Come back for 3 months. You can't just do what you're doing." And I'm going, "Ah." And he goes, "We understand that it's your employer's issue. He's the one that did you wrong. He didn't get you a work permit." And so we got it all worked out. We stayed for another 6 months before we left. But I tell you, from that day on, if I'd have heard a knock at the door, I was wanting to move up. Immigration. I mean, I was on pins and needles for that 6 months. I was so scared they were going to kick us out. So we never went to Germany, and we never went to Ireland because I was afraid. I didn't want to be confronted with the passport thing again. And I got on the phone. As soon as that trip was over, I get into our house. I pick up the phone, and I call them, and I go, "Hey, what's going on, Jim? What's going on?" I go, "Work permit. You never gave me a work permit. I almost got kicked out of the country." And they're going, "Oh, really? You didn't get it? Oh, well, my bad." You know, it's like, "What do you mean you're bad?" You know. I had never been so scared and sweating so many bullets in my life than dealing with that immigration.
Old man gets deported.
Yeah, I thought I was gone, man. I thought I was getting deported. But it all worked out.
That to me
was the thing, that honesty is the best policy. You know, you just be honest with them, you know, and tell people what's going on. And the honesty will get you out of anything, I think, you know, any kind of debacle that. So that's when I learned that honesty is the best policy. But man, I was so mad at my home office. Oh, you guys. Yeah.
When did you retire?
I retired, let's see, when did I retire? I retired when I wanted to retire when I turned 62, and I was born in 53, so I don't know, what was that, 2016, something like that. It's been over 10 years. It's been over 10 years, Jeremy, that I retired. But I remember I wasn't of retirement age. You know, they say, "Oh, you got to wait till you're 65. And I basically went, "Screw that. I am not waiting. I'm done. I am done working." I loved my job. I really did. I loved my job. I loved doing what I was doing. But I was tired of getting up at 4:30 in the morning and going to work every day. I was just tired of going to work. And so I told Grammy, I says, I'm retiring. And she goes, you don't want to wait till you're 65? I go, nope. They go, well, they say you can make more money from Social Security if you wait those 3 years. And I go, no, I did. You know what? I did the math. I'm giving them 3 years of my money that I'll never recover. So, no, the difference between 65 and 62 is not enough for me to wait. So she goes, well, give me a year. So I think I was like 61. And she goes, give me a year and let me work on getting our finances in order and everything. And then we'll talk about it when when you're 62. Okay. So on my birthday, when I turned 62, Grammy hands me an envelope. We don't give people gifts. We don't give each other gifts for, you know, holidays and birthdays and Christmas and that. We just don't, you know. And so she hands me a card. I go, why'd you give me a card? You're not supposed to give me a card. She goes, will you just open the card, please? So I opened the card. It says, it didn't say birth. She scratched out birthday. It said happy retirement or something. I opened up the card and there's the pink slip for my truck. She paid off my 2008 Yukon. Huh. She paid it off. It was mine, free and clear. So now we don't owe no money on our vehicles. Everything's free and clear. And she goes, I'm ready. We're set up. Anytime you want to retire, anytime you want to pull that, you do it. Do it. So the year that I turned 62, I went in there and I told him, January, I'm done. I'm out of here. And I can't remember the year that was. I just can't remember. And, the coming January of my 62 year, I left, you know, I pulled the plug. I left, you know, well, let's see, if that was 62 and I'm 70. So that was, 8 years ago.
Yeah, it was eight years ago.
8 years ago, eight from, 2024. Now you're making me think, man, where's my calculator? So anyway, it's been a while.
16.
It's been a while since I returned. 16. So I retired. And this is the kicker, Jeremy. The first few years of my retirement, all I did was walk around and sweep. I swept the front yard. I'd sweep the patio. I'd sweep my shop, you know. Grammy go, what are you doing? Sweeping. You know, I just was sweeping and mowing the lawn, just enjoying being outside, enjoying not getting up at 4:30 in the morning. Well, then, you know, the years passed. And I start the podcast. You know what I'm doing now? The podcast, 5 days a week. I'm up at 4:30 in the morning, get everything ready. And so they go, you don't have a hobby. You just replaced your job with the podcast. I'm working 5 days a week doing a podcast, you know, waking up at 4:30 in the morning. I'm back into the old rock grindstone, you know.
It's habit.
It's habit. And like I said, this is a hobby. And people don't understand when you do a podcast. I mean, you don't just do a podcast. You got to. No, I do the live show. I don't record. So I'm not doing no editing. I don't edit nothing. Everything is as it is. There's no script writing. But you got to do post podcast stuff. You got to get it ready to post. You got to get it published. You know, there's things. So I'm busy with my podcast from about 4:30 in the morning till noon. So I'm busy. I'm working, you know.
Yeah, it gives you something to do.
It gives me something to do. Grammy says it keeps me off the streets.
Well, you know, a lot of people when they retire too, I see this so much and I hate it. I've seen a lot of older people when they, you know, they get to 65 and they're like, you know, 62 to 65 and they're like, I'm going to retire. Well, then they retire and, you know, they live in a subdivision that's got somebody to cut the grass. So they can't do that. Yeah. And so they, you know, they sit there and they're just like, and then like 2 years later, you see that, you know, so-and-so passes away at the age of 67 and it's like, you just retired at 65.
Right.
So I think
see that too.
I think it's important to give yourself something to do.
Yeah. You gotta have something to do. You gotta be busy doing something. I mean, one of the hobbies I picked up also was, believe it or not, remember when you're a little kid and you'd go to Denny's or go someplace, or Howard Johnson to eat, and they'd give you that little menu for kids where you got the color, and then there was a dot-to-dot section. You did the dots. You connected the dots 1 through 10 or 15, how many dots were there, and they were numbered. Well, I got hooked on doing dot-to-dots, believe it or not. I love doing dot-to-dots. I've got books. I've got a I've got three books that I work out of, and these things are like each picture has at least 1,000 dots in it that you got to connect. And I mean, I'm doing stuff that turns out like the Eiffel Tower, the Golden Gate Bridge, you know, the Statue of Liberty, Renaissance paintings. You know, I mean, these things are elaborate, dot to dots. The dots are so fine and so little, you got to use magnifying glasses to look at them and find them. And that. So I get stuck doing that stuff. And it's fun. It's very relaxing. You know, I'm just sitting here doing dot to dots. Yeah. You got to have something to do.
My grandpa, he would talk about my grandma on her cell phone and stuff like that, and how like addicted she was to like cell phones and stuff. And, but like he would sit there and he watched television all day. And so one day I got him a smartphone and, I called him. I was at AT&T and I had an extra line that they were like, hey, if you cut this line off, if you turn this line off, it's going to raise your phone bill. So I call him. I'm like, hey, you want a cell phone? He was like, well, I guess I sort of need one. And I'm like, well, which phone do you want? And I was like, you know, there was an iPhone and then there was this huge LG phone. I can't even remember. And he was like, give me that huge, because he only had one eye. He was blind in the other eye. And so I got him that, brought it to him. My wife got it all, you know, figured out for him. Well, then like a week later, she's running around the house and she's taking pictures of him and she's showing them to us. She was like, he was talking about me, but now look at him. So like, I think you got to have something to do, whether it's, I mean, my gosh, man, if you just sit there and stare at the walls or if you sit there and just stare at the television, you'll drive yourself crazy.
Right. Right. I find people that, they make fun and they laugh about old people that gardening, but gardening is a great activity. I mean, you know, you're planting stuff, you're watching life, you're watching things grow. If you're doing vegetables, you know, you're able to go out. I love it when we got our gardens going because I love going out in the backyard and I like picking cherry tomatoes off the tomato plant and eating them right out there. And, you know, I love seeing things grow and I like seeing them, you know, the little critters and the birds running around. And I mean, yeah, you got to do something. I mean, it might not be veggies, but you grow flowers, do something, you know, get out there and mix it up in the dirt and just, you know, become one with nature and just do something.
My wife looked at me the other day and said, last night. Yeah. She looked at me last night and she was like, do you want to get some bees? And I'm like, get bees. And she's like, yeah, do you want to get some bees? And I was like, for what? And she was like, so we can make our own, like have our own little bee farm with like honeys. And so like, you know, we like, when I say we lived in the city, like we really did, like we really lived in like, we get, so, cause like we did live in like a subdivision, you know? And so like farm animals were banned inside the city limits and, you know, things like that. So you couldn't have them. And so like, you know, how I grew, like you were talking about, like, you know, people making fun of older people for gardening. My generation, I'm seeing us starting to do it more because what we're getting at the grocery stores are just so unhealthy. And like tomatoes, like I was like, well, I can't have a full blown garden. So how can I grow tomatoes? You know what I did? I went and got me some 5-gallon buckets and I drilled holes in the bottom of them and I filled them up full of, you know, good soil. And I put the plants over in that and I ran me some bamboo sticks instead of using like the other ones. I got some bamboo sticks and I ran them down and tied the plants up to them. I grew those tomatoes that year, but what the number one thing that I grew was, and I couldn't even get people to take them because they were so hot, was I grew habanero peppers.
Oh, we grow peppers all the time too. Yeah. That's some good stuff right there.
Yeah.
You grow your own stuff. You make it right there. Tomatoes and peppers. You're making your own salsa.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. And it'd be better than anything you buy in the store.
Oh yeah. I guarantee it. Oh yeah. Like I'm seeing people make their own bread and stuff like that now. And I'm like, you know, like I was amazed. I didn't realize, and we got to wrap this up here in just a minute, but I was amazed at Flower.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know they bleached Flower.
Yeah, they do.
And I thought, how unhealthy is that? They're putting bleach to Flower?
Exactly.
Like, why can we not just have like regular old Flower without the bleach?
Exactly. Why can't we? That's a good question. You know, yeah. Why can't we have just regular food without all the chemicals? That's what I want to know.
Like, I mean, it's just, oh, well, we don't understand why cancer's so high, you know, and it's just like tobacco. Tobacco grows naturally, right? If you take a tobacco plant, you cut it up, you put some molasses with it, mix it up, you know, dry it out, whatever, mix it with some molasses, and then you make some chewing tobacco out of it. That's fine. But then they're like, okay, well, we got to add these pesticides and this and that and this and that. And it's even like cigarettes. I've seen the U.S. government, they're talking about smoking harms people, it kills people. Well, you know what? Smoking's not good for you, but at the same time, the government needs to stop putting carpet glue in the filters of the cigarettes to make them go out so people won't burn their houses down.
Exactly.
So,
you know, all I got to say to people out there, you know, and because marijuana is getting, you know, where you can pretty much grow your own little stash and this and that everywhere in the country, it's becoming legal.
Yeah.
If you can grow marijuana, you can grow tomato plants.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, if you can grow marijuana, you can grow potatoes. I mean, you can grow this stuff. I mean, you might not be able to grow a year's supply. But I'm telling you what, if you grow a garden, and you can grow things in tubs and barrels, you know, I don't have any land. I live in an apartment. Grow it in a 5 gallon tub. I mean, there's ways you can do that, you know. You can do that. Make sure you got tubs that are food and not paints. But I mean, you can do that. You can grow your own stuff. And I tell you what, the first time you eat your own produce, you put your hand to the plow, you planted your seeds, you saw things grow, and you plucked that first tomato off the plant and you eat it, you are going to be hooked.
Oh yeah.
You know, you can grow sweet peas, you can grow beans. I mean, just try it. And that's the best thing you can do with kids. I have people say, well, I can't get my kids to eat vegetables. Well, then grow your own vegetables.
Exactly.
Let them plant their own vegetables. Let them be a part of the process and watch them eat vegetables.
I grew watermelons when I was a kid. Like, that was one of my favorite things of doing was growing watermelons. I had a neighbor. He's still living. And like he's up in age now, but like I would grow watermelons out here on this piece of property that would go between us and the neighbor, you know, and it was like a little hill because that's the best place to grow watermelons on a little bit of a hillside is what I was always told. Well, anyway, I would grow those watermelons when I was a kid. He would come out there and he'd be like, I'm just getting me a watermelon. You know, nobody paying it any attention at all. But I love that. I love that I was growing something. Like you were saying, like, you want to get your kids to eat them? Let them grow them.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's amazing to me how the kids don't know where food comes from.
Oh, I know.
Where does hamburger come from? Safeway. It comes from the grocery store.
Yeah.
Real quick, I had this assistant, and she had little girls. She's making hamburgers for dinner. And her one little daughter comes up and goes, what are we having? She goes, hamburgers. And she goes, huh. She goes, where does hamburger come from? And she goes, well, it comes from cows. Comes from cows? She goes, yeah, it's meat. And the meat comes from cows. They get it. They grind it up and they make hamburger. She goes, so we're eating cows? And she goes, yeah, we're eating cows. And she says her little girl stops and thinks for a little bit. And she goes, why are we eating cows? And she turns to her and goes, because they taste good.
you know, that was something I seen last night too. You know, like turkey, like we call it, like when we go to buy it at the grocery store, it's turkey. And when we go to buy chicken at the grocery store, it's chicken. It's for the name of the animal.
Well, yeah.
You know, people don't think about this a lot of times, but when you go to the grocery store and you look, you want cow, what do you have to buy? You have to buy beef.
Yeah, so or pig. Yeah, you get pork.
So why are they named different?
I don't know.
I found that out last night. This is a weird fact, but it's true. That's what the apparently they're French, like the upper class of the like over in England and the French and all that.
Uh-huh.
So apparently the upper class would only eat beef and pork, and it was some, like, I guess that's the word for them, I don't know, in some language or something like that. And so the common people would eat turkey, would eat chicken, and that's why the names are like, that's why chicken has a common name. Like, it's a chicken out there, and then it's a chicken. And then, mm-hmm. like, it says cow. Well, we're not going to say we're eating cow, so we're eating beef.
Nah.
So that's why it's got a different name, like different classes. You know, like, it was based on the class system. Like, if you were rich, you ate beef and you ate pork.
Well, I actually one time went into a restaurant, and it was kind of a classy joint. We're going to get some steaks. And the guy goes, "What can I get you today?" I go, "I want some cow."
My grandpa.
I come in there for cow.
My grandpa was in a place with a guy one time, and they, you know, it was kind of similar of a place, and they were two rednecks from Alabama, you know. And my grandpa, you know, he's real, when he goes anywhere, anyway, he was always real serious. Like, he was not, you know, I'm not going to joke around with the waitress or nothing like that. So he goes in with this guy, and this guy orders a steak, and the waitress looks at him and goes, "How do you want it?" He said, "Knock him in the head, wipe his butt, and throw him on my plate. That's how I want it."
We're supposed to go out for a steak dinner this weekend. I'm going to do that. That's exactly what I'm going to say.
That's what he told him. He said, "Knock him in the head, wipe his butt, and throw him on my plate." That's what.
That's excellent. That is excellent, man. That's awesome.
Oh, man, we got to wrap this one up, buddy.
Well, I don't really – I hope that I was able to entertain and answer some of your questions. Jeremy Cummings, I love you to death, brother.
I love you too, man.
I am so tickled pink that you wanted to spend a little time talking to me. And I will gladly do this with you anytime you want, man. This is awesome.
Oh, yeah. This is fun.
It is. And I wanted to make sure that you understand that you have a standing invitation to come into the Old Man's Podcast anytime you want.
Oh, yeah.
I'll just put everybody else on hold. And you're not No, I don't do that. Thanks for the opportunity, Jeremy.
Hey, I appreciate everybody. That's Jim, the old man of the Old Man's Podcast Show. You can catch it on Podbean. To do that, just download the Podbean app, Podbean, and look up the Old Man Show. You'll find him. He's right there. He's one of the most popular shows on the Podbean app. And go do that. Download it. Listen. You can listen to him on the way to school to take your children, and you don't have to worry about what they're going to say, because it's a family friendly show.
Yep, exactly. And it's the Old Man's Podcast.
The Old Man's
Show.
The Old Man's Podcast. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll forgive you this time.
He got me. He corrected me.
Don't ever do it again.
No, I won't. I won't. I promise.
Okay.
All right. The Old Man's Podcast. Make sure you go check that out. And until next time, go tell somebody you love them. If you didn't like what you heard here today, it ain't controversial. It's just culture.